It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 362 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week we wrap up 2018 with a wonderful interview with Mike W. Belcher from the indie comic Man in the Mask. I came across it recently and bought the trade from him and really liked it. And so we're talking about the book, the process he goes through to make the book, what the relationships of the characters are and how that impacts the story, as well as a great action tale that he's got going. So there's a lot of good things in Man in the Mask. We list the website where you can get this and give other information about the good stuff that Mike's up to, including what we could expect from him in the near future, which is good stuff that I'm really looking forward to. If you're celebrating New Year's in the coming week, Happy New Year, Happy 2019, and thank you for your support during 2018. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast Mike W. Belcher, the writer and artist of a wonderful book called Man in the Mask, with a subtitle of Emerging from the Shadow. How's it going today, Mike?
I'm doing great. How about you?
It's good to talk with you. I was going to tell you, I managed to notice your book, which I ordered from you, and I got it and I read it, and I was kind of really interested in talking some more about it. I saw it on Facebook was where I saw it.
Yeah.
You must have done some Facebook advertising.
Actually, not Facebook. I mean, I've been lucky enough that when I put a post up, people share it. And I guess you caught maybe something like that, because I've done absolutely no advertising. What little bit of word of mouth I've gotten is from word of mouth.
Interesting, because I was so certain I saw it on Facebook. And I saw stuff, you know, of course, the artwork is always the thing that catches people's eye first.
Right, yeah.
So I caught the art, and I like the art. It's kind of a simple superheroic style, and there are some folks with powers in this book. But the main characters, and this is something, a topic that comics always love to deal with, and which I'm always fascinated by, is the relationships of, like, fathers and sons, and like grandfathers and sons.
Yeah, family drama always interests me, and I think that when you can maybe relate to somebody along those lines, I think there's story to be told.
Mm-hmm. So talk to people. What is the Man in the Mask? Talk about the series. Because I was reading the introduction in your book, and it talks all about that this is a series that's been going on in your head since you were 11.
I mean, on and off, it was something that it was kind of, you know, I've always been interested in doing comics.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's one thing when you're sitting in your bedroom trying to, you know, come up with things to doodle or coming up with stories of that you can do. This kind of formed over a number of years into the form that, well, I finally got to publish for myself.
Mm-hmm.
But as I was saying, you know, it's a family bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the story at the heart of it is it's the idea of being asked to carry on a family business. And it's kind of complicated when you find out the family business is wearing a mask and kind of being the guardian angel of the city you've been living in.
Mm-hmm.
And then you complicate it even more when you're 9 years old and being asked, which is the lead character. He's got this kind of, you know, your perspective at nine is a whole lot different as you get older.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all cool and everything, but you know, when you get 15 or 16, you start looking at it maybe from a completely different point of view, and then you add family drama to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are those relationships?
Mm-hmm.
And I was lucky enough to have a really good relationship with my grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
And that was another little thing I wanted to put into the story. I always wanted to make my grandfather a fictional hero, because he was a real life hero to me. So, you know, the grandfather-grandson relationship in the comic is very close to what I had with mine.
Mm-hmm. Which is good. I really enjoyed the relationships in the story a lot. We get to see, well, the dad was kind of interesting, you know. He turns out to be something of a Captain America type hero, which I liked. While Man in the Mask, the main guy takes different forms as the transition goes from grandfather to grandson. So I like that very much about that. Now, let's talk about the art style, because you did both the writing and the art on there.
Yeah.
This is kind of it looks like a 80s or 70s kind of inspired art style.
I'm a child of the 80s as far as the prime years of my comic book reading. Mm-hmm. And even though I've always been a comic book reader, those are the years I kind of hold on to the hardest. And there was some kind of aesthetic that, and then you add that to years of doodling and kind of evolving your style. And I felt like as comics got more real, I went kind of the other direction because while I respect people that can be so realistic, I feel like comics should be a little surreal. You know, I don't necessarily think it should be the window out my, you know, I shouldn't be looking out the window at it. It should be maybe a little more stylized. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how that style developed. It was a little bit of that. I just like a little more cartoony. And then I'm also into animation, so I guess that kind of added to it.
Because one of the things I always judge are the facial expressions, which I found to be really simple and yet still really strong. You know, we get to see things. You don't necessarily have to have a lot of detail in the face to be able to get the expressions out. And I thought you did that really well. That was one of the things I really liked about the book.
I appreciate that. You know, when you're trying to tell a story, you try to make that come across, you know, show, not tell.
Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, one of the modern things in television and stuff like that is you don't necessarily have to have a lot of dialogue. It's better to have something that you see, which sometimes I don't think comics remembers, because as I read comics, I see a lot of word balloons and lots and lots and lots of text. And yours wasn't that way. Yours was much more, it was punchier. It was, the dialogue was much more, I'd say, realistic in the way that you portray them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a great listener. That's if I have anything, I can listen the way people talk. Mm-hmm. And I am proud of my dialogue. You know, I may, with my plot structure, it may be a little different, but I'm pretty happy with the way I can relate. Mm-hmm. You know, different voices. I love to listen to people talk. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting how people relate to each other in different ways. And that's one thing I really work hard on trying to do, put down on the page.
Mm-hmm. Well, it turns out real well, because now I got to ask you, of course, since the relationship between your grandfather was an important influence in the book, were the characters based on people you know, or are these kind of, did they spring out of your imagination without having any kind of real life base to them? How does it happen?
It's a little half and half. The relationships between the grandfather and the grandson is definitely me and my grandfather. He was a man of very few words, but he made sure that you knew his intentions, and he was a very proud man. You know, he served in World War II. He was a coal miner here in Eastern Kentucky, and he was somebody that you know how you stood with him, and he, you know, he thought very highly of making sure people around him knew that they could count on him, and that's something that I always related to. Mm-hmm. And then the relationship with the father was kind of the same with mine. I mean, you could almost exchange the idea of a mask with the idea of doing comics, because my grandfather was always very, very supportive of me wanting to ever do comics. And my dad didn't really see it as a kind of a career, and we butted head quite a bit, you know, as father and sons do, we do. So there was a, you know, in the way the character is a little bit of the antagonist of the book, because, but in a loving way, because that's another thing that developed over the years. When I first came up with the idea, he was a very kind of harsh character. Mm-hmm. And that was the one thing with me having so many years between the conception of it to actually doing it. I became a father myself, and I found myself kind of softening on his character, because I thought, you know, maybe I wouldn't be so high on this either. You know, if this was, if I was put in the situation. So it was interesting how my point of view changed from the, you know, like I said, the initial idea of all this conflict that I actually, I made him more human in this book. And I felt like it worked better. Because I've shown other concepts to some friends of mine, and then they agree with me. It works better this way. There's a, even though he's antagonistic, there's still a level of care. There's still a level of, you know, there's a reason I don't want you doing this, and I'm not, you know, I'm not just saying this just because. There's a reason.
It's real interesting to me about the father, and I've talked with other folks who have done, you know, tried to relate the father son relationships in comics and stuff, and I'm always fascinated by it. And I thought your take was really interesting in the sense that, you know, we've lost some of the things like legacy, and everybody wants to go out and be their own thing. And it's interesting that the dad in the story actually has a different identity, let's say, than the grandfather. And when the grandson comes along, he's more open, it seems, to being able to carry on the family name, as it were.
Yeah, I was very keen on doing that because of, for one thing, I wanted a very generational approach. And so I started looking at, you know, the way comics were generational. So I wanted to make sure that the grandfather was pretty much in that masked man, plain suit kind of mold of pulp heroes or early, you know, Golden Age characters. And then I wanted the next to be very Silver Age, very 60s, very 70s. With a different kind of, you know, point of view, very different ethic about the way they go about it. And then because of the relationship I had with my grandfather, a lot of people always thought that I was very old for my age. And that's because of the way my grandfather carried himself. He kind of inflected that on me. So that's kind of the reason the story point that I put in there is that because the grandson spent so much time with the grandfather, it was just more of a natural progression. He felt more akin to it because, like, that's the way I was. I mean, I was 13 or 14 years old wearing a fedora, and because that was my grandfather. My grandfather never stepped out of the house to even go to McDonald's without wearing a hat and a suit jacket. And, you know, he was very prim and proper for, you know, because that was just his generation. And I identified more than that than my dad, who grew up in the 50s and the 60s. You know, that was just a different vibe. So I wanted to instill that. I felt like that. You know, that they, because of the relationship, that he would identify more with that.
Which is really interesting because, you know, I had something of the same experience. My parents had me very late in their life. And so they were much older, and my dad was somebody that I, you know, if I went to like a basketball game from the high school, he would wait until all the rest of the crowd was gone, and then he would come and pick me up. So I had to stand and wait there. And I was a little put off by that. I thought, why do I have to stand here in the cold and wait? But the thing about it was that he didn't really want to have an accident. And as he got older, he wanted to, you know, be able to drive as long as he wanted. And so he would always just do those kinds of things.
Right, yeah.
So it's an interesting thing because, you know, you grow up with a different perspective than, say, somebody, you know, you got, say, a single parent or something like that. It's a very different way. It's a much more stable relationship as far as that goes. Like you talked about the fact that, and I think it's true, it comes out in the book, that you can always depend on your pop, as you called him.
Right, yep.
And I got a kick out of that because as the story goes along, we get to see much of the pop, the relationship of the original man in the mask shows up into the grandson. And I like that because it's interesting, too. You make a really big point, and I think it's a good one, about the fact that there's no dark, terrible event that creates the man in the mask. It's out of a sense, I kept coming up with the word hero in my mind, that this is, you're talking about what it makes to make a real hero.
Yeah.
And you see that in these different characters. And it doesn't necessarily mean everybody's going to get along.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I enjoyed the fact because, you know, we're used to, I'm used to Batman being very dark and moody and stuff like that. And, you know, some people are really drawn to that. And I've always loved the character as a result of that. But I was also drawn to the heroic nature of the characters, that they did things out of a sense of wanting to make the community better, as opposed to, you know, of vengeance or things like that.
Yeah, that was something that was probably high on the priority list. If you look at comics, especially today, tragedy pretty much rules the roost. Mm-hmm. And I wanted, I guess you could say, I wanted to make a modern age, golden age character. I wanted to do, you know, I think a lot of those golden age characters in the 40s, if you look at most of their origins, there's a lot of volunteerism. And of course, I think that had to do a lot with the war. Mm-hmm. And you just kind of didn't, that's something that's definitely faded, that you, because you've got even, you know, with Marvel characters or DC characters, I mean, there's more tragedy that made them want to go out and do what they did. And I just felt like, you know, that puts a lot more burden on the character. Mm-hmm. And from my point of view, I wanted it to be more of a, you know, I see something that's wrong and I want to fix it. And what do I have to do to fix it? Mm-hmm. And should I ignore it? No, I mean, because I think, again, as comics have gone by, the fun aspect has kind of faded away.
Yeah.
And, you know, what happened to wanting to, you know, tie a cape around your neck when you were 10 years old on the playground and just play and have the fun aspect? When did it not become cool to be a superhero? Mm-hmm. And I think if anything, comics have gotten so far away from that, just the fun aspect of it. Mm-hmm. And that's really what I wanted to do in the young years of the grandson. I wanted him to be that point of view, is like, you know, this isn't something he's loading on me. This is something that's, you know, he's doing me a favor. He's, you know, any kind of conflict that the character has with it isn't because, oh gosh, I just don't think I can deal with it. It's more of, I realize how important it is and I want to live up to it. Mm-hmm. So any doubt the character has is more toward that than being a burden. Mm-hmm. And that just seems more interesting to me. It, you know, if you're doing it for altruistic reasons, mm-hmm. and it just seems to me like when you're trying to build a character up, when you're trying to build this kind of a relationship up, the idea of, again, volunteerism, the idea that there's something that needs to be done and I want to do it, I don't need to be prompted into it. And that's really something that was high on the priority list of me trying to get across in the book.
Mm-hmm. Well, it comes across really strongly, and I really like it. You know, I maybe it's because I'm from that kind of time period myself, and I was raised in that idea that there's sometimes you just need to do what's right, as opposed to, you know, go out and try to seek revenge or something like that. So for me, it's really strong on that. I was really, it was very appealing to me to have those kinds of things. I agree with you. I wish we had more of that in comics. I really do.
Yeah, it's sorely lacking, the idea. I mean, the strongest characters that are out there, I mean, are like I said, the volunteer, like Captain America. It's a very strong basis of volunteerism. Is though this, you know, this is a selfless act. You know, he gave up his time and he gave up his health and the possibilities or whatever. But it didn't matter. And like I said, that was something that I just really wanted to my characters.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things about the art was that it reminded me of Bruce Timm from Batman the Animated Series. You know, that show had a very simple style, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, it was very good. It was very, very strong in the fact that you didn't have a lot of detail, but he still managed to tell a lot of story through little detail. You know, and what he did use, he used well. You know, and that's the kind of thing I feel with this book. There's not, it's not like George Perez, for example, draws lots and lots of buildings, and all the detail is just amazing, you know, that he could put in there, and I always enjoy that. But sometimes I like just the simple expression of a story like yours. It's very graphically pleasing to look at, you know. As you see it, it works, you know, in a really strong way. So I thought that was a great thing about the book, was how the choice of design of the page and design of the characters are usually pretty, you know. See, I'm afraid if I say simple all the time, it's going to make people think that it's not very interesting. But visually, it is interesting. It's just as the story is appealing, so is the graphics. And I think you did such a good job with it, and it just really, you know, when I got it, like I said, I bought it from you, and then when it came in the mail, I sat down and read it, and I was very interested in how you put it together and how this all worked. And there's real touching moments that go on. And, you know, let's just say that he endures some loss, the main character, along the way.
Yeah.
And you handle that. You don't, you know, sugarcoat any of that. That he still has a real life to deal with as well as his mission. So, you know, all that kind of good thing I really liked. It made the character very human.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons I call it Man in the Mask. You know, many years ago, you always try to think, oh, what's a cool name? What's whatever? And it's like, well, what do I want to do with it? And it's like, well, it's about the guy. Mm-hmm. And it just seemed to me like just a very simple phrase, Man in the Mask. It really just kind of fit what I wanted to kind of get across. It was, that these are people behind the mask. I mean, it doesn't diminish the fun aspect of it, but at the same token, there's a lot of living that you can document. There's a lot of things that you can put out there. And, you know, like you were saying about the art style, you know, yeah, Bruce Timm, I was a very big fan of his art style. And it's it is one of those, I call it simply complicated, because it on the surface, it looks very simple. But if you see and look at all the emotion that he has to get across in very sparse lines, you know, it's very complex. Mm-hmm. He's having to get a lot of information across very quickly in animation, and that simple style, you look at, oh, anybody can draw it. No, they can't. Mm-hmm. There's a complex thinking behind it. It may come across as a simple line work or whatever, but there's a complexity there that it awes me. I mean, it amazes me that anybody can. And Darwin Cook was the exact same thing. I mean, I still, you know, I get shivers whenever I pick up a Darwin Cook book, just because it's just amazing what he did and exactly what kind of loss we all had of just somebody so talented. Mm-hmm. It's just so, like I said, it's perfect.
Yeah, he was able to do things with minimal, what they call a minimalist style. You don't have to, you know, I see some drawings and I look at the face and I go, oh my gosh, I must have spent hours drawing that face. But yet, I think sometimes you don't necessarily have to do the detail as much. But, you know, you bring up a topic that I got to ask you about, and it's called Man in the Mask. One of the things that's interesting about the character in here is that he doesn't have a superheroic name. He's not like a Batman or a Captain America or stuff like that. The Colonel does, on the other hand. The father, he has a superheroic name. But the other guy does not. The man in the mask, and he's called one time, I think they referred to him as Mr. Mask. And he says how much he hates that name that was given to him.
Yeah, that was another thing. Along the lines of Man in the Mask, I kind of thought to myself, if someone's doing something very altruistically, very selflessly, you know, would he be caught up in a name? And that's something that I was really apt on. I thought, well, what if he just doesn't stop and say, well, you can call me. Maybe he just feels like his actions should be speaking for him. And that just kind of worked for me. I really felt like, hey, maybe I've got something here. I could have the more of the mystique. I wanted to make sure somewhere within the book that, you know, because he didn't name himself, other people named him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are different names. Newspapers called him one thing. The police called him another. You know, I thought that would be fun. And just his reaction, that names were, you know, for vanity plates. They weren't for somebody like him. He wasn't really out to make headlines, or, you know, he wasn't really out there to do anything but what he was there for. And I felt like with the colonel is set up to be different. The colonel is more of a Uncle Sam figure. The government sets him up as a, you know, look here, he's a figurehead, you know, somebody look at him and admire. So it's a completely different aesthetic. He's more out there. He's more of a spotlight character. So he had to have a name, but I also didn't want to go too complicated with him. I wanted to go very simply and along with the art style, because I felt like, you know, you hit upon simple ideas and simple things that relate, and I think people will have an easier time getting it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't want to overcomplicate things.
Yeah. Something that's interesting to me, this made the book more realistic in the fact that he did not choose a name, but people tried to name him anyway. Because I've been watching like shows like where they talk about like the Hillside Strangler or something like that. You know, it's the opposite direction, but the Hillside Strangler didn't suddenly come out and say, I'm the Hillside Strangler.
Right, exactly.
The press named him, and I got a kick out. When I read that, I had a very real, you know, it's felt more like the real world than like a superheroic story can be.
Yeah.
Because another thing I always notice, too, when I watch the Batman movies, he rarely says, I'm Batman.
Right, yeah.
And people rarely refer to him as Batman and stuff like that. So I got that real sense that you're being more realistic. And yet, somewhere in the middle of this, you still have the Colonel, who is very far away from this mold. And the contrast between the two is really interesting in the story. I like that real well because it worked so well in the fact that you're right in saying that he lived for the mission. He didn't live to be a superhero. He saw something that needed to be fixed. And other people decided they wanted to try to name him.
Right, exactly, yeah. I thought that was just, like I said, it's like you said, more realistic. It just seemed like it fit the character more.
Yeah, I like that. I thought that was really strong about that. Now, I always like to ask people who are writers and artists, are you a writer / artist? Are you more of a writer who likes to draw? Are you an artist who likes to write? How do you see this? Like, when you put the story together, did you write the story and then do the drawings, or did you draw and the story sort of took shape as you drew it?
The way I did it, I consider myself a writer that draws. Okay. You know, I know my shortcomings. I know what I can't do. And so, you know, in my head, I had a very kind of a loose outline. Mm-hmm. And then I would put it to paper just so I would have something to refer to. But generally, I kind of just drew it scene by scene. And then after I drew it, I would write it by lettering it. You know, I kind of just did it. It was a very, I guess, creative way of doing it. Instead of, I just felt like I really didn't need to script it because I kind of knew what I wanted. And also, once I drew it, I knew that maybe some ideas changed once I actually got it into, you know, actual physical form opposed to in my head. So that loosened it up a little bit. So I a lot of the dialogue that as I was lettering it, you know, some whole situations changed when I actually had the physical page in front of me and I was lettering it. I sometimes changed the tone of what I originally drew it for. So it was an interesting process. It took me a while to do it because I was doing it, you know, at work, you know, outside the little bit of time that I had. So by doing it, I was trying to, I guess a lot of places I was kind of shortcutting the work a little bit because I knew that I was doing most of it. So I could edit it as I lettered and I could, you know, well, this maybe would sound better considering how I drew it this way. And so, yeah, I consider myself a writer that just happens to draw.
Okay. Well, what's interesting to me is that when before you put this collected volume out, you talked a little bit about how in the introduction or somewhere, too, that I was reading, that you went back and actually updated the artwork a little bit here and there.
I had done a release of this a little bit earlier, and I took it around cons. And it was one of those things because, you know, I put this off for so many years because of time, because of, you know, doubt, you know, you name it. And I had some friends that started doing their own books. And I guess you could say that kind of prompted me to maybe give it a try. And so I put together a version of the book that I was happy with. But as I was kind of going along with it, I thought, well, I could have done this here. I could have done that here. And so I was kind of put off trying to get it out on a larger basis because I had things I wanted to change. And so this version that's selling right now at Indie Planet and through my comic or through my website is the final version. And it's the complete version with a lot of things maybe I had missed the first time I made some copies. And I feel like it's a little tighter. There were some things that I felt like I could have improved on art-wise or storytelling-wise. and you know, the things you think about once you get done with it. Mm-hmm. You know, I was very keen that once more people bought the book, I wouldn't change it. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of, you know, that's kind of where I went with it. Mm-hmm. I knew that if I was to make another version, that would be it. Mm-hmm. And so this, the book that's selling right now, the one that you bought, mm-hmm. you know, it's the ultimate story for me on that. Yeah.
Okay. Now, of course, I got to ask, you know, I enjoyed the story and I'd like to see more of this. Are you thinking about continuing? I mean, obviously it says emerging from the shadow, which makes me think that this is just the beginning. Do you have more stories for Man in the Mask?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the graphic novel. The graphic novel, that was another reason that I updated it. Mm-hmm. The graphic novel was kind of, I really thought that once I got it done, that was pretty much going to be it, because the time involved in it, the energy, because, you know, I don't just work during the day. I run my own business, so mm-hmm. that takes a lot of my time. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of thought that once the graphic novel was done, that was pretty much it. I'd kind of scratched that itch. Mm-hmm. But I kind of felt like I hit on something mm-hmm. That was missing in my life. And mm-hmm. and once I got onto the con circuit mm-hmm. and going around talking to people and seeing the reaction that some people had to it, I just thought, yeah, I do have more stories. I just never thought I'd get around to it, but guess what? I'm going to.
Oh, boy.
And that's something that I've been working on probably a little bit longer. I've been trying to get the graphic novel to be more widely out there where mm-hmm. people can find it, because I'm not going the regular distribution, because Diamond, you know, there's just so much involved in going mm-hmm. through Diamond. But I'm trying to get more digital, you know, Comixology. And like I said, I'm through Indie Planet now, and you know, people can buy the book through there, both digitally and in print. And mm-hmm. again, I sell it through my website. But mm-hmm. Now I'm focused on issue one, you know, mm-hmm. what happens after that last page. Mm-hmm. And it's turned out to be a very rewarding situation, because mm-hmm. the graphic novel, I built the world. Mm-hmm. And now I get to explain mm-hmm. what happens next. And I find myself really excited by that notion. Mm. And right now it's pretty much close to being done. The first issue, I've been extremely lucky that I've been able to wait as long, because I'm, you know, the whole process has been very fortunate for me as far as waiting. Mm-hmm. It's like I say in the graphic novel, mm-hmm. the good thing about the wait between when I came up with it and actual getting in print was I got to work with my son with it. My son colored the book. Mm. And that was something that wouldn't have been possible because he wasn't around when mm-hmm. I came up with the idea. Mm-hmm. And in this instance, this number one, I've been lucky enough that I've been able to, and with the issue, in addition to finishing or continuing the story, mm-hmm. I can add extras to it. And I've got pinups from people that I've come to know through Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I love the idea of collaboration. I love the idea of including other voices, mm-hmm. Other approaches mm-hmm. to my characters. Mm-hmm. And especially with issue one, I've got a backup story mm-hmm. that's written by Mike Barron. Mm-hmm. I've gotten to know Mike Barron over the last couple of years. And, mm-hmm. and I did some lettering and some design work for him, and he asked me, you know, if I'd like to him write a story for me. It's like, I'm not going to say no to Mike Barron. I'm a huge Nexus fan and Badger fan. And so, you know, I'm lucky enough that, again, I've waited on number one, but I've been lucky enough that when one comes out, there's a lot of good to it. There's a lot of stuff that I feel like, you know, I've been lucky, embarrassment of riches, so to speak, of mm-hmm. what I've been able to offer with it. Because, you know, doing the graphic novel was a learning process. Mm-hmm. Going to cons has been a very interesting learning process. Mm-hmm. And so with number one, I feel like I'm kind of at bat, and I'm pretty assured of myself on this one. So I'm excited to be releasing it. Yeah.
Yeah. I've got a question. I've got to know more about this. Are you going to, it sounds like you're going to go digitally as, or online, as opposed to trying to go through Diamond, stuff like that. Is this going to be an ongoing series? Is this going to be like a mini series that you're going to collect into a trade like you did with this one? How are you going to move forward?
Well, originally I thought that maybe I would just do a series of graphic novels. And graphic novels take so long to do because there's a lot of thinking. And comics, it allows me to kind of pace myself. And I'm a real fan of Randy Rinaldo and how he does Rob Haynes' adventures. He kind of just does a story when he can. Mm-hmm. And while I'm going to try to do it more frequently, I want to do it in storylines. And I want to try to release single issues that form a story. Mm-hmm. You know, I know I can't do a monthly book. Mm-hmm. And but I'm going to try my best because, you know, I'm doing this for fun. Mm-hmm. I luckily don't have to rely on sales, whether a book is something I continue, especially with print on demand and, again, digital and physical sales through different places. I mean, I can release these books when I get them done. And mm-hmm. like I said, my Facebook page and my website, I can make announcements when something's available. And I'm trying my best to find a schedule. And that's the reason that I've taken so long trying to get number one going, is I wanted to see what exactly I could do in a certain length of time. But the whole purpose of the graphic novel was to kind of launch into a fun little, you know, fun little series that I could kind of put my creative attention to, the world that I built.
Mm-hmm. See, that I got to congratulate you on. One of the things I really get frustrated with is the fact that people don't want to generate their own worlds or create their own scenarios. You know, it's much easier to drop into Marvel or drop into DC or something and then live with the world that's already been built. But you actually took the time to form this whole situation from the ground up. And I always have to applaud that because, you know, it's too easy to steal from somebody else and take their framework and live within that. So I wanted to tell you that particularly. I really enjoy when I see something that is completely built from the ground up and done well. And I really thought Man in the Mask is that way.
I appreciate that. I worked really hard to give it a form. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I looked at it as a reader. Mm-hmm. You know, would I read this? Would this something I would pick up? And, you know, I'm a harsh critic of myself. And that was one of those reasons that the book took so long to do. I was very harsh on myself. Mm-hmm. And the very fact that I can hold the book in my hand and look through it and can't find, I mean, I'm of course I find places like, oh, well, I could have. I'm happy with it. I'm happy with it, and I'm proud of what I did because, you know, I feel like I accomplished something that my 11-year-old self started, and I feel like I've kind of completed that voice, and I'm very proud of that fact.
What was it like when you held your first comic in your hands after it had been printed? And that must have been some kind of experience, like
out of body kind of thing. Yeah, that was it's one of those things you just don't quite. Yeah, I don't think I have words for it. It's just one of those things you read so many of other people's work and other people's stuff, and then when you're like, it's like, no, I didn't do this. You know, it's like you're holding it. It's like you want to examine it from all corners and all angles. It's like, did I do this? I did do this, and doing that book, 120 pages. Mm-hmm. I think to myself, I remember doing it, but it's kind of like now it's a blur. It's like my wife and talks about childbirth. It's like, you know, you don't remember childbirth. It's like, well, I don't really remember doing this per se because it was hard work, mm-hmm. but it was work I really enjoyed doing. Yeah. And I like I said, I still hold the book and I'm very proud of it. Again, I'm hoping to get into as many hands as I can because I am pretty proud of it.
Well, what I saw of it really drew me to it, and that's why I ordered it. I paid for it so that you could send it to me. When I got it, I couldn't wait to dive in and start reading because it's one of those great comic stories. I think that it's, you know, like I said, world building to me is so rare. today. Too many people want to live in Gotham City, and too many people want to live in New York City and stuff. But you built this whole world with very different characters in a very different situation and made it work. And to me, I think that's a real accomplishment. So that's why, you know, when you talk about other issues and stuff, I'm excited. I want to see these other things.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, you'll be seeing some, yes.
Do you know when? I mean, as far as you talk about working on a schedule, do you have any ideas to when you're going to put out an issue next? Because I know real life gets in the way of comics. You can't help it.
I'm hoping within the next month or two.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, the issue one is going to be 40 pages. Mm-hmm. It'll have the two stories in it, pinups. Like I said, everything a cool number one issue should have. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's another thing comics have gotten away from, because all these reboots and all these restarts. And, you know, number ones used to be very important, mm-hmm. you know, and they used to be pretty nice to look at. And now they're just kind of, oh, it's a new way of restarting sales. But, you know, I really am trying to make an issue, you know, number one that I'll be proud of.
Mm-hmm. So this is why I asked before about the fact that is it a mini series? Is it ongoing? You know, it seems to me that what happens a lot these days, and you really don't have to worry about the numberings, though, if you tell the stories and then you collect into a trade format, you know, as long as you have a story that kind of hangs together, you don't have to worry about that so much.
Yeah, the way I've got the book set up is it's going to be a four-issue storyline to set up the new status quo. Mm. And then afterwards, I'm going to try to do a lot of single issues, a lot of single issue stories that mm-hmm. people don't have to remember. They just have to remember the status quo. Mm-hmm. And I just felt like I kept thinking I wanted to do that right off the bat, but no, I felt like with the graphic novel, I had a start and I had a finish. And I think with this one, I need to give pretty much the same thing. I need to give what's the new world. And then once I establish that, I want to try to make it very approachable and very something that anybody can pick up.
Mm-hmm. So is this going to be available through like Facebook or the website? How are you going to let people know that the book's available?
Well, Facebook and my website will announce it, and then I'm going to have it on Indie Planet, mm-hmm. and then I'll sell it myself, and then I'm hoping to get on Comixology. Mm-hmm. It seems like that's the place to go when it comes to digital. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm not opposed to trying to find a publisher, but at the moment, I'm pretty happy with doing it myself. Mm-hmm. I've thought about Kickstarter, but I don't know about the time involved with it. Mm-hmm. You know, it seems like I find that while I'm glad and very happy to support a lot of Kickstarters, mm-hmm. I don't know necessarily if that's the avenue for my book mm-hmm. or not, mm-hmm. but it's going to be a learning process. Mm-hmm. I find that a lot of people get caught up in the planning of it and they don't really execute it right. Mm-hmm. I just want to get to a point where I just create the books and hopefully I can find the people to read it.
See, that's one of the things that discourages people in making comics is the business aspect of it. Because you want to tell the story. The important thing to you as a storyteller is to get the story out so people can read and react to the story. But you often get bogged down into finding printers, finding, you know, different things. See, the good thing is you can do a lot of this yourself, and if your son's going to continue to color it, that'll be a great thing, because what that does is you've got basically an in-house operation.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
If you go digital like that, so that's good. You brought up Kickstarter, and I was going to ask about that, if you had gone that route or not, but apparently you're able to handle some of this on your own. But Kickstarter, if you ever... If the belt needs tightening, the Kickstarter is one way to raise a little extra money to help make these things happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you don't need to do that, you know, more power to you. I'm glad for that. A lot of the folks I talk to on this podcast are people who are running a Kickstarter and they're trying to raise money and they're looking to get the word out about that. And I'm always for that. But, you know, I like the book, and it's if you've got a system together that makes things go and you're going to continue to go on, boy, I'm all for that. I have to support that. I think that's great stuff. And I'd love to see this thing. I'd like to see more of this because this is really a very well-told story with a lot of humanity to it that. I like it. You know, it's funny because, you know, when I read the Justice League back way back in the Gardner Fox days when he wrote it, they used to say that the characters were interchangeable, that they really didn't have personalities, that they had superpowers. And, you know, Batman would team up with Wonder Woman because they were somewhat similar in how they did things and stuff. But you never knew any personalities and stuff. And yet your book brings out so much of the personality of the characters involved in a real strong way. So it's one of the things I liked about it. It's an interesting contrast between when I first read comics and reading your book, was that you focus a lot on the characters. But still, there's lots of good things going on. It's not that they're sitting around emoting all the time. There are things happening, but the characters stand out in a lot of ways. So I kind of like that about the book.
Yeah, I'm very character-based. I mean, a plot is nice. It's a good direction. But if you don't have characters telling you where they're going to go, you know, you can't make your plot. Mm-hmm. I'm always a character-first guy. I've tolerated bad plots if the characters are good. I mean, both the TV, movies, novels, whatever else. And I feel like it's when the character starts speaking to you, you've done your job. Mm-hmm. And that's the cool thing. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the thing that, you know, when I was constructing the graphic novel, you know, in my head, I had what I was going to do, you know, 20 years ago, mm-hmm. opposed to how I was approaching it today. Mm-hmm. And I felt like the characters were saying, hey, we're not those guys that you had in your head 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. You can't take me that direction. And that was just kind of a surreal moment when you do that. It's like, wow, I guess I have kind of gotten some dimension into some of these guys that they're, you know, now they're kind of, you know, pointing the way where I should take them. It's like, wow, this is, and that's what is about it. Creating comics, mm-hmm. The great thing of doing it later in my life is I get more enjoyment. I think if I had done this earlier, mm-hmm. I think I would have been caught up in numbers and caught up in, well, did they really like it? And at my age now, I find myself just enjoying it. And mm-hmm. again, like the con experience, I'm just enjoying being around people that are doing the exact same thing. We're not making any money doing this, but we're loving every minute of it.
Mm-hmm. You're a storyteller.
Yes, exactly.
You like to tell stories, and that's, you know, we're lucky enough to be able to read the stories. This is one of the things, I think we're in an era where people like you can pick up the mantle and do comics yourself. You don't necessarily have to sit there and do, you know, you don't have to get hired by DC and do something for DC or Marvel. Stuff like, you can do your own book, and that gives you the freedom to tell your own story the way you want it. Instead of, like, say, Marvel come down, oh, no, you can't do this that way. You have to do this the way Marvel way. But you get to tell your own story, and I think that's, we're in such a great era right now where indie books like yours just come out and tell great stories and tickle the fantasies, you know, take us places we've never been before and stuff like that. So that's the thing about Man in the Mask that I really like, is that it's a story that I haven't read before, and it's got a very satisfying conclusion to it, and yet there's more to be done. So I think that's a huge accomplishment. I really do. And I think, Mike, that I was so glad I ordered the book. When I started to dive into it, I lost track of where I was and stuff, and I was in the world you created until I got to the end of the book, and then I wanted more. So it's a great book.
I'm glad you liked it. I appreciate that so much.
You know, we talked about the fact that you have a website, but we haven't mentioned what it is. Do you want to mention what it is?
Yes, it's amkcomics.com.
Mm-hmm. And what's that stand for, by the way? Is that all my – I'm trying to figure out what the K stands for.
All my... Actually, that's my family. My design business is AMK Studio. Oh. AMK stands for Aiden, which is my son, mm-hmm. Mike, which is me. And Carrie is my wife.
Okay.
And yeah, so that's what AMK stands for. So it pretty much goes everywhere I go, especially on comics. So amkcomics.com. That's pretty much where you can go and get any kind of news, and order other books. And it just, that's pretty much, you know, my soapbox, so to speak.
On Facebook too, you said?
Yes, I have a Facebook account, facebook.com/AMKComics.
Okay.
Which is good. You know, it's
so we should get in touch. We should follow you that way. We should keep in up with what you're doing, and you'll put announcements out when things are ready and progress is being made, things like that.
Yeah, I try to post there pretty regularly, but now where I'm leading to the book. I'm now posting previews of issue one. So between now and the release of the book, I'm going to try to put sketches, page developments, the pinups that other guys have done for me, just things that kind of get as much noise about the book as I can out there.
I have to say, one of the great things about the volume that I got a drawing of the Man of the Mask in there that you put in there and said enjoy on it with your signature on there, which I really loved. I thought that added a nice touch to it. So, you know, I appreciate that. And you don't know me from Adam, so I really appreciate the fact that you do that. You probably do that for more than just me, I'm sure.
Well, you know, when you're a small press guy, you know, you don't have the massive marketing or the merchandising of DC, Marvel, Dark Horse, Image. And that's what I love about it. I love, you know, I'm kind of an introverted personality until we start talking about comics. And when I get to cons, just talking to anybody and just having a conversation show, you know, giving a little image or giving a little sketch, and just I want to make sure people realize that I really, really appreciate anybody picking up this book. I mean, I appreciate not only the buying of the book, but the fact that you read it, and if you enjoy it, awesome, you know, because I put a lot of heart, a lot of time into it. And when someone tells me that they liked it, it makes my day. It makes my, because I didn't do this. You know, when I did it to scratch an itch, I did this initially to, it was something missing in my life. But once it was done, and again, once I started getting it out there, because it just seemed like the next progression to it, it just, I liked the feedback. I liked the talking about it. I liked, you know, like what we're doing right now, having a conversation. I'm just so proud of it that anytime I get to talk about it, I'm a happy man.
That's a wonderful book. I really enjoyed it. I'm so glad I ordered it. Whoever directed me your way on Facebook, I would thank you to them, because you know, I would have missed this and I would have really feel sorry for that. But it's called Man in the Mask, and we talked about the website and Facebook and good things like that. I know you've got a real life too, and you're working on this. Are there other projects you're working on we should be aware of? And maybe we should find out which cons you have in store for 2019.
Well, as far as other work, again, I, you know, I resisted Facebook for so many years, and then when I got the book out, everybody was screaming at me, you've got to do Facebook, you've got to get on Facebook and help promote. It's like, oh, okay. But through Facebook, I have to admit that I've gotten very lucky. It's like I mentioned Mike Barron earlier. Again, I'm going to letter some books for him, and I've done some logo designs for him, and again, I've gotten to kind of know him. And again, he was nice enough to write me a story, and he didn't have to because he's Mike Barron. But I've also, you know, I've also through Facebook, and I've gotten to work with someone whose work really meant a lot to me, which is Ron Fortier, because his Green Hornet was a big influence on me when it came to this kind of story. And I've gotten to know Ron pretty well through Facebook, and I've done two stories with him. And, you know, little just small press runs on other for some other publishers. But the very fact that I got to work with him was it meant the world to me. And I've got one other story with him right now that I've just not had the time to do, but it is on my absolute whenever I can do it, just because it's written by him. And I, like I said, I feel so lucky that, you know, he's also supported my work. You know, I sent him a graphic novel, and he was very enthusiastically happy about it for me. And so that's the other kind of work. I mean, I don't get to do it often because I don't want to disappoint anybody that I'm dragging because, again, I'm balancing a lot of things. But I find myself, again, it's an embarrassment of riches because, you know, within this year, you know, I got two stories with a guy that I thought the world of. And you know, the story I've got in my own book, another incredible writer that I can't form words what means to me. So that's about the only other extra work. Other than that, it's pretty much Man in the Mask.
Okay. Do you have any cons set up for 2019?
Right now I've got a couple, mostly ones that I can drive to. I'm in, you know, being in Eastern Kentucky. You know, I've got, there's a Huntington con, there's a Cincinnati con. We do have a Lexington Con, which is huge, and I'm not going to be able to make that one.
Mm.
And actually, there's a con that I help put on in this area. We've been pretty lucky. This coming year will be our third year, and I'll be doing that one.
Mm. What
is it? The Pikeville Comic Con. It's in Pikeville, Kentucky. And, you know, this past year, we were lucky to have a lot of people. We had Greg LaRocque of The Flash. And Greg, like I said, you know, another person that you know, I admire him, and that's one of the reasons I invited him. And when he came, it really, you know, meant the world to me. And not only did he come to the con, but he bought one of my books and then turned around and drew a picture of my character and gave it to me. And so, you know, again, embarrassment of riches this whole year has been. But, you know, so what little extra time I have is devoted to, you know, putting on the best Comic Con we can.
Wow.
So, you know, as far as the cons, you know, right now everything's still forming, but those are the Huntington Tri-Con in June. There's a Star City Comic Con in April. And then ours is first weekend in August is the Pikeville Comic Con. Like I said, we're still trying to get a guest list going because we've got a little bit extra time. But, but you know, any other small cons that I can find, I usually try to get to as far as accessibility. This year, definitely, I'm trying to do as many as I can. And I'm going to post. And I'm going to post a schedule on my Facebook as soon as I get up. So.
Very good. Well, if you get a chance, go to amkcomics.com or go to Facebook and look at it. And I'm sure you'll be able to find the way to get a hold of this book because it's a great book, and I highly recommend it. And I can't wait to see more. That's the thing I keep coming back to. So I'm going to be following your Facebook stuff to make sure that when something new is out, I'll get a chance to buy it and read it because I can't wait to get a hold of it.
Very cool. Thank you.
And the time will come, I'm sure, when the next collected edition comes along. I'll be after that too because this is one of those stories. I have a bookshelf, and the stuff I really enjoy goes up on the bookshelf. Oh, I meant to tell you one quick story. Well, I can't. It's interesting you talk about the fact that it takes a little while for the stuff to get done. David Peterson, who does Mouse Guard, I interviewed him one time, and I asked him, you know, I said, well, why are you doing a podcast interview? He says, well, you know, I want people to know that I haven't died. It's been so long since I did something. I didn't want people to know that I haven't passed away. I'm still really working on this stuff. So it's a kick when, you know, doing the work is a little solitary until you get it all put together like he does. But, you know, he does wonderful stuff, I have to say.
Oh, yeah. I've seen the stuff, yeah.
He's great stuff. And so your stuff, too, I really enjoy. So it's going on the bookshelf. And I got space dedicated for future issues and stuff like that, too. So.
Thank you.
It's Man in the Mask, and it's Emerging from the Window. Do you have a subtitle for the second go-around, or is it just going to be Man in the Mask?
It's basically just Man in the Mask right now. Once I get the four issues done, I mean each of the four stories that I've got that's going to comprise the first collection has got their own titles, but I'm still trying to come up with a name with the next collection. So until I get them done, I won't be thinking too much on them. So
okay, well it'll present itself probably when you have the whole story in front of you.
Probably, yeah. Like I said, I've got an outline, but yeah, so
that's a writer. That's how a writer does stuff. It's good stuff like that. So, well, I love the book. I'm so glad I got it from you and I got a chance to read it. And I highly recommend it. It's Man in the Mask, and it's got some really interesting takes on the human condition, as well as you mentioned in the introduction, you talk about the fact that it's about growing up. Which I like. I thought that was a good point to make, too. Not many comics are about evolution of characters. They have to stay the same from month to month so you can sell them. But your characters grow and change in there, and I always enjoy a story like that. So you're doing wonderful stuff there, Mike, and I hope we get to see a lot more of you. And I'd like to be able to talk with you again when some books come out in the future because it's great fun to talk with you about all of these good things, and you make such good stuff that I think people should know about it. So maybe we'll do that in the future, too.
Oh, that sounds great. I'd love to do that.
Okay, well, keep up the wonderful stuff, and I will stay in touch with you and be able to follow you on Facebook so I could, just like I did before, I'll be able to get more Man in the Masks. So thank you very much.
Hey, thanks, Wayne.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne, as a man. I'm so flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but it's a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
Hope you're enjoying a wonderful holiday season, and that you'll be back next week when I'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.